Hola, chicas. Welcome to Encuentras Your Voice podcast, where we hold the mic for Latinas to unfold their stories, vulnerably share pain points, and vibrantly celebrate joyful success of self-discovery so that all of us can learn these valuable life lessons. We are Latinas defining the modern cultura. I'm your host, Consuelo Crosby, coming to you every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific time. I'm so grateful to have you here on this almost spring Wednesday, coming to you from San Francisco, California, where we are sending out the love calls to our Latinas around the world and welcoming you here today. This is a little different. If you noticed, we took out our intro. Seems like we're all a little busy and want to get right to it. I get it. I wish we would just slow down our lives. I would totally have you all here, have the ceviche made and sangria pouring if we were doing this in person. So just hold that thought because it's going to happen. I hope you're starting to plan your epic outdoor adventures and get your amigas all lined up for some fun in the sun so that when you come back inside for some chill time, you are ready to tune into some movies. Especially the movies from dynamic duo we have as guests today. These two have made it their mission to create films based on the stories of our comunidad, stories of life experiences and pain points that become more universal to the human condition, the more they get uniquely personal. Think about that for a hot minute. We are so honored and excited to have these award-winning filmmakers share their personal stories of navigating two cultures, feeling solitos in their college experiences, almost ashamed at never seeing themselves represented in the television shows and movies they watched, yet glorifying their aha moment when they realized their dream was not for themselves alone, but for the greater good of the comunidad, fueled by their mamá's lessons of resiliency and grace. Director Miguel Ángel Caballero and actor Luis Antonio Aldano are an award-winning filmmaking and screenwriting team whose inspiration for storytelling came at a very young age. Though Miguel's English was limited, he enjoyed making up storylines in real time as he interpreted reruns of Little House on the Prairie for his abuela. Isn't that so darling? I wish we knew little Miguel. Meanwhile, Luis's imagination was ignited by the photography books and novels he'd sneak peeks at in the fancy homes he'd help his mom clean. Much later, their paths crossed at UCLA, at the School of Theater, Film, and Television, and they found that they shared backgrounds as working-class, queer Mexican immigrants. This common ground allowed them to tap into a deep creative well as collaborators that continues today. Their latest Oscar-qualified sci-fi short, The Ballad of Tita and the Machines, executive produced by Lena Waithe, premiered at the Tribeca Festival in 2023, screened at the Toronto International Film Festival of Rising Voices, and won the Audience Award at Outfest. And as you will hear later in the episode, there's big news coming for this Ballad of Tita and the Machines short. So grab your favorite food and bevies, settle into your comfy spot, and get ready for Miguel Ángel Caballero and Luis Antonio Aldano to light up your hope and dreams and to feel seen on the big screen. Welcome to Encuentras Your Voice podcast, both Miguel and Luis. We are so grateful to have you here and so grateful you took some time for us. Happy you're here to join us.
Thank you, Consuelo. So happy to be here.
Thank you so much for having us. We're excited to chat.
Yeah, it's going to be a great chat. Let's start off a little bit, as we always do. in learning about your heritage and what brought you here to the U.S. or whether you were born here. What's your story?
I'm a Mexican-American Chicano. So I was actually born in Mexico, in the state of Michoacán, in central Mexico. And I came here at an early age, but I kept migrating back and forth because my parents were farm workers. So they would come here, work the season, and after the season, they'd migrate back to Mexico. So for the first about 12 years of my life, I grew up 6 months here, went to school here for half a year, and then migrated back to Mexico, went to school there for the rest of the year. And that was my life back and forth. And I grew up here. I grew up in Oxnard, which is about an hour north of Los Angeles, where it's kind of like the capital of strawberry growers. So like that's where my parents did a lot of their work. And then I moved to Los Angeles to go to UCLA to the School of Theater, Film, and TV. And that's how I ended up here.
And then for me, similarly, I was also born in Mexico, outside of Mexico City, in the state of Mexico, in this little town called Tulpetla. My family migrated when I was 5 or 6 years old. We ended up in Southeast Los Angeles. I grew up in Huntington Park. Mm-hmm. You know, elementary, junior high, high school there, and then ended up at UCLA. Then after that, I did a stint at the London Academy of Music and Dramatic Arts, came back, and sort of have been working here ever since. So,
oh gosh,
that's my history.
Beautiful. Yeah, no, beautiful stories. So before we get to going further, because I understand you both met at UCLA, just a quick little snippet. What was it like growing up at that time for you? Did you carry a lot of the cultural heritage? Obviously, if you're Miguel going back and forth, it gets a little difficult splitting, you know, which culture are you living in any given moment?
Yeah, I think for me and for us, you know, Luis and I share many commonalities, and that's why we, you know, came together to be a filmmaking team. But for me, you know, just in general, growing up, even before UCLA, I think there was a sense of that, of living on both sides of the border and kind of how to handle that and, you know, in our upbringings. And I just remember growing up, like in my early childhood years, I do remember the lack of our representation of our people in film and TV, and not seeing my culture in film and TV. And I remember at an early age kind of thinking that our culture was inferior because it was not talked about. You talk about this white culture and this is how things should be. And it's a sense that kind of you get because you're not seeing yourself on the big screen. Mm-hmm. You're not seeing yourself on TV. So that's something that I kind of carried onto UCLA. Eventually, you know, in my late teens, I learned to really embrace my culture and see like that it is very beautiful. And the only thing is that it's lacking in the media, and we need to infuse it and make stories about ourselves to appreciate our culture, who we are. And at UCLA, it was actually very isolating for me because a lot of the folks, first of all, I was the only brown person in my whole junior class, the only Latino in my whole junior class. So it was really difficult for me to connect, not only because I was, you know, Latino and they were not, that had something to do with this, but also because of the economic inequalities. Like most of the people there were very wealthy and they had their parents pay for there, and they didn't really have to worry about buying textbooks and how to get there. So it was really hard for me to sort of like really integrate myself, but there was a core of a handful of individuals that were just like really wonderful that I still kind of am in touch in social media, but it was really hard to integrate into the theater culture, specifically theater at UCLA.
Oh, yeah, I get that. How about you, Luis? Wow. Yeah, I get that for UCLA especially.
Yeah, I grew up at Huntington Park. You know, they joke, they used to call Huntington Park the northernmost point of Mexico, right? You know, I mean, I grew up in a school that was like 98% Latino, you know.
Awesome.
And so for me, from going to Huntington Park to UCLA, there was a bit of a culture shock coming from a place where everywhere that I looked, you know, I just sort of saw reflections of myself, right? And so then stepping into a sort of a another environment, another community where I no longer saw myself. I had to literally search myself out in the student body, right? And when we grew up, you know, seeing our stories or the lack thereof, you know, not seeing our lived experiences represented. Mm-hmm. And I think that really at a subconscious level had a huge impact on what Miguel and I are doing now. We knew many years back, you know, when we first started working, that we were going to do this. We started off doing it in theater and we pivoted, and then we're now doing it in film and in TV, hopefully. But for us, the mission has been very clear.
That's beautiful. Yeah, no, you've touched on so many important points. I'm really grateful for you just going ahead and giving us full circle between finding your place yourself and for yourselves, but also realizing, yeah, you're doing this beyond yourself, which I think is very on point for the comunidad. I really feel that inherently, we rarely do things just for ourselves, that it's always for the greater good, or it's always for the community. You see yourself as being a part of something greater than just you, and therefore really affecting, bringing joy and hope to the entire community. Did you think you had that greater picture in your mind the whole time? Because how did you keep going? I can't imagine this was a smooth road at all.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's very interesting because I had a completely different journey of getting there in my head, because I was comparing sort of the lives of very successful actors. And I started acting. That's my background. I'm no longer an actor. I exclusively direct, write, and produce. But I started off even in my teenage years doing theater in high school. So I really was gravitated to entertainment. And, you know, I thought like, this is going to be my road to really make the movies that I really want to make. I will become a star. I will make a lot of money in acting, and then I will use that money to finance my project.
Okay.
But more and more I realized, even today, we have very, very little Latino stars. And that kind of road, I think right after UCLA, I was like, wait a minute. The roles that I'm going out for are usually co-stars, very little series regulars. How am I going to do this? So you kind of learn to kind of pivot. I could have either been like really angry at the industry for like not writing roles for me, and this is like that, and kind of going down a downward spiral and being like very miserable with everyone around me. But like, we decided to take agency and we're like, okay, so I'm going to write and I'm going to put myself in the director chair, and then we're going to create movies. We're going to produce. We're going to fundraise. We're going to find family. We're going to do a social fundraise like on these platforms. And we decided to do stuff on our own, and just every project kept growing and every project keeps growing. And we hope that it continues in that direction. So we really took agency, and instead of really complaining about the lack of, we wanted to be change and create what was lacking. And that was kind of the journey that propelled us. So for me, it was a very defined pivot into like, now I'm going to dedicate myself to writing and directing and producing these projects that I want to see. And that's kind of where it led me to where we are today with our company called Cabaldana Alchemy.
You did have a completely different path in some regard, because you were all glam, you were all the star. And you still are, so we love you for that. But yeah, hard pivot. I love how you're putting that out there right now to the audience, because I do see, it doesn't matter whether you're the creative, whether you're in the STEM fields, whether you're in the professional field, consultings, it doesn't matter. We tend to hit that point of just being angry at the system and feeling like we have no control over it, which is exactly how they want you to feel. It's exactly why they're not making it easy for you.
And also, I'll add this to that, that, you know, it's a really... I'm not saying it's not a harsh industry. It's an industry that really, that there's a lot of rejection that comes with it. Mm. And the only thing that could keep you going, like, can't just be goals of like, I want to do a film. And Luis and I have these conversations all the time. Under those goals, you need a mission as to why. And I think that's what has kept Luis and I going. We have a mission of why we want to tell these certain stories and share these stories with the community and with a broader audience. Luis is an actor still. And as you know, he's been in a lot of my films, yeah. Not because we're partners, but because of his talent that is not, you know, there's not enough roles that recognize his talent. So I love to work with him because he's a talented actor. So like he knows still, and I knew too, that the industry can chew you up and spit you out. It rejects you. It is harsh. It judges you. It excludes you. And there's all this that comes with it. And I think one of the most poisonous things as well to do is comparison. Mm-hmm. And you start comparing yourself to other filmmakers. That filmmaker started after me. He already got there. Oh no. And begins this sense of anxiety. We start to think that there's not enough like pieces for all of us. Mm-hmm. So we have to compete against each other. So once I was like able to kind of recognize this, that I'm in competition with no one, no other filmmaker, but myself and who I am, and to be a better person tomorrow than I am today. And this is my own race. The race is with myself, not with those peers around me. It just kind of like really relieved a lot of the pressure of where I should be or where the industry says I should be at certain ages and stages of my life. And it really did relieve a lot of pressure. And then I was able to refocus and go back to mission. Like, what is my mission and why am I doing this? And if I get to work on this every day, I get to. So like, that is a blessing already that we get to sit down and create stories. So keep moving forward all the time.
Yeah. And I would just add, you know, always inspired by you, Miguel, of course, but reminded right now, Guillermo del Toro, right? I recently read something where he said, as a filmmaker, the struggle is continuous because the natural state of a film is that it shouldn't be made. Every film, you know, if you're a filmmaker listening to this, I think you understand, because you tap into the truly difficult, challenging process that it is to get a film made. Cinema is just intrinsically difficult. You know what I mean? It's an expensive art form. Yeah. It takes, you know, no less than a team of super dedicated people all focused on the same thing to maintain that focus for 3 days or, you know, 21 days. It's difficult at every sort of juncture. And I think that the thing that Miguel and I have come to learn is that fire and that keep going, that energy that propels us is connected to our mission. It's not about he and I becoming famous. It's not about, you know, having a huge house and, you know, having all the sort of the things that come with this notion of success, right? Because yes, those things are nice. And if they happen, wow, incredible. But if those are the things that are driving you, the fuel is going to run out inevitably. Anchor yourself and tether yourself to something, like we said earlier, something that is so much bigger than yourself. It's powerful in that it gives you that inexhaustible fuel to just keep going and meeting every challenge and every wall and every no with like, all right, got you. I'm going to go this way now.
Yeah. And I'm reminded too, Luis, when you're saying that, like, you know, at UCLA, I mentioned that it was in the theater department specifically was kind of hard to kind of adapt, but we did have excellent teachers. And I had this like amazing African-American teacher named Kent Gash. And he said something that was really impactful based on what Luis is saying about mission. And then he said this quote that like really has stayed with me. And I kind of revisit it to just check it. And it's very simple. And he said, like, you know, the one advice I could give you all in this class is love the art in yourself, not yourself in the art. Yes. And there's a lot of people that just like the fact of I'm in show business. And like Luis said, that's going to run out of fuel very quick. And you need to like just love the art in yourself and have the mission of why you are doing things.
Yes. It tags right onto our tagline here on the show. It's like we want to know who you are, not what you are, but who you are, because who you are is so much greater than anything you create. Right. So anything you create is amazing and powerful. And really, these two that we're going to talk about right now are just strike to the heart. And yet, even so, they are only a small piece of what either of you, let alone the both of you together are and can be.
Right.
So you are so much bigger in your own known, in your own person.
Right. Yeah.
But speaking to the beauty, the absolute beauty of the industry in these two films, Equitzoramo and The Ballad of Tita and the Machines, the two that I was able to see, Equitzoramo is streaming on Max, so anybody can see it right now. And The Ballad of Tita and the Machines, I really want that out there really soon. Why don't you, for the listeners who haven't seen them yet, quick synopsis, maybe Miguel Duguan and Luis do the other, of the storylines and how they came to be.
Sure. I could start with Equitzoramo, and then Luis, do you want to do the Tita?
Sure.
So Equitzoramo is actually a story about this elder that lives in a small rural town in actually Equitzoramo is the name of my town that I grew up in Mexico, in the state of Michoacán. And it's about a story about an elder that loses his partner. He's a gay elder that loses his partner, and he calls his partner's estranged son in Chicago, and they haven't talked in over 15 years. And he says, one, your father's been living in this small remote town. Two, he passed away. And three, he was gay and he was with me. Do you want to come to his funeral? And that's the beginning of that story, where this guy from Chicago flies to this remote town to see a father that he hasn't seen in 15 years. And through this conversation with an elder and a younger man, we see if we could bridge the gap, the generational gap. We see like them come together through empathy of having lost somebody. And the son actually gets a sense of why his father left, because he was gay and he didn't, you know, he was, there was stuff that happened. I won't give the whole plot away.
Yeah, no spoilers.
No spoilers.
But yeah, that's,
we
that's
want everyone
the story.
To watch.
That's yeah, the right. story of Equitzoramo. And very quickly, the way that story came about is that I remember I grew up in that town, like I said, and I remember that there was like a handful of elders that just were never married. And as a queer boy, I was very innocent about the fact why they wouldn't. And I would remember just asking my mom repeatedly, like, why is so-and-so doesn't have a wife? Why does so-and-so doesn't have a husband? And she would always kind of like shush me and be like, that's not polite to ask. So I didn't really know why these elders were single. It was just always a story like they never really found somebody. But as, you know, as I grew older and I accepted myself as a queer, as a gay man, I started reflecting back into these elders that I knew as a child. And I'm like, what if these elders, it's not like they didn't find somebody, but they didn't feel free mm-hmm. enough to love the person they really wanted mm-hmm. to. And what if they were gay or lesbian or queer? I really want to kind of dive in and explore this moment with an elder and humanize these elders, and that it's at this moment in their life that they need love and compassion, and kind of just, it was just an ode to our elders and kind of like an exploration of two different generations that come together in this story. So that's the story of Equitzoramo, and then I'll have Luis talk about The Ballad of Tita.
Yeah. The Ballad of Tita and the Machines tells the story, again, of an elder woman, Tita, who's recently lost her partner, Pilar, right? And mm-hmm. she's a farm worker. And so in this unspecified near future world, you know, where artificial intelligence has been completely integrated into our daily lives, she goes to work one day and this machine determines that she's not going to be able to produce enough for the company. So this machine decides that she's disallowed to go to work, right? And it tells a story of how she then is sort of forced to hire an artificial intelligent humanoid to do her work, right? And again, no spoilers on this podcast. It tells a story of this woman who is now faced with this challenge in her life in this future world. And, you know, we make a commentary about the human spirit. We make a commentary about mourning. We make a commentary about the power of tenacity of Tita and how she affects the world that she lives in. So, you know, broad strokes, but people should people should watch the movie.
Absolutely.
And then just to add to that, like, in that, like, yeah. what Luis and I wanted to do with Dita is really kind of shine a light on our blue collar working class labor workers that often go mm-hmm. unacknowledged in the US, but it's the people that are responsible to bringing food to our table that they just go unacknowledged and unappreciated. Mm-hmm. But without them, like, you know, they carry this country on their back. So that's kind of like the point that we wanted to make with the film. And we, Luis and I decided to take it in a, it's a sci-fi, but like with some humorous moments, and we decided to go a little absurdist as well. So like it's an entertaining ride.
I'll speak to Dita first because I actually saw that one first and it really spoke to me on so many levels. You know, I do have the love for my elders, my abuelita, you know, but there is a lot of humor in it. But being told you can't, oh, that's like, no, slay, not doing that. You know, being and told you're not good enough, that you have to step aside, and the man's telling you this. And it's just like, right. You know, I could feel my shoulders just like going up and up and up, like, don't. You know? Don't. But thankfully, you do add a lot of humor into it. Both films are loving and poignant and impactful. And they speak to the characters really living for who they are. They're not fighting to be who they are, but they're insistent that they will not change for anybody, just in the way they live their life. You think this is your storytelling through the Latina lens, or is this more inherent to who you both are?
You know, let me take this real quick, Miguel, just because I think we'd be remiss if we didn't sort of get to the heart of it. I think Miguel and I talk about this all the time, so I'm sure he'll agree. Miguel and I were raised in matriarchal families, okay? Our mothers were, you know, they were queen to us, and I think to both our families, you know? And I think that has a huge, huge, huge impact on the way that Miguel and I tell stories, you know what I mean? Both our mothers have passed. Actually, Miguel's mom's name was Consuelo. So I keep on seeing your name there.
And you didn't tell me? Oh, okay. Queen.
Yeah. So, queen. So, you know, I think that lived experience, that reality for both of us, inevitably and brilliantly and subconsciously really do affect the way that we tell story, the type of stories we're going to tell. And I think specifically also the type of female characters that Miguel and I write, and I'm grateful for that. You know, I'm grateful for having had a beautiful mother who cleaned homes in the west side of LA, you know what I mean, that taught me grace, that taught me hard work, that taught me tenacity, all these things now that, you know, maybe when I was a snot-nosed kid I was annoyed at, but only now, you know, as a grown man, am I always and forever grateful for all those lessons that she taught me by being the person that she was and doing the things that she did. And like what you're saying, you know, never allowing anybody to tell her that she wasn't enough, that she was self-defined. And she showed that by the way she lived her life. So we have to shout out our moms.
Yeah.
Whenever
and
we
also,
can.
Yeah. And I'll add to what Luis is saying too. There's also another element in us having grown up, you know, queer and in a community, Mexican community, where it was really hard to really accept ourselves for who we were. Mm-hmm. So I think now that we're as adults, that we actually embrace our own sexuality, that we embrace who we are, we do really write non-apologetic characters that are who they are. And I think, you know, just kind of thinking about it, that may have also a layer in terms of the protagonists that we write, that they're very, you know, everything that Luis said, and also very unapologetic, and they're just very strong characters.
Oh, God, I love that. I love that. And I love that you carry on from your mothers, the beauty that they were able to instill just from their tenacity and love of life. I think the love of life.
Right.
Is something that, yeah, exactly. That when you speak to the beauty of the culture is a love of people, love of life, love of seeing that in other people, again, rather than how much money they have, rather than what they do. And and wanting to get in with people because maybe it will get you further ahead, which is all you can write that into your next film. Speaking to being on this side of the screen, speaking to being in the audience, what can you share with the listeners? What can we do? What can we do? Because, gosh, we want these stories. We want to be part of these stories. We want them out there in mass as the mainstream. Is there anything that we can do as a community to really make it easier and make this happen?
Yeah, there was a very tricky question that was asked at one of the Sundance panels. And they asked, what are you doing to find your audience? And, you know, like, it's a very tricky question, but I think, like, first and foremost, I think, Consuelo, having podcasts like yours that actually goes into the community that people could see and discover, like, new films, books, what, you know, our community is doing, I think they're super important. And I think it's a start there to really start kind of disseminating these films and word of mouth. And in terms of, like, feature films that are out there, I mean, it's been said again and again and again and again, and I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but we really do have to support the films that we want to see. And we really do have to go out to the theater and see these films to kind of give other filmmakers an opportunity to see them. Because unfortunately, the industry right now does see us as a genre, basically. Yeah. Like, we're seen as a genre and not as, like, you know, we can do sci-fi, we can do comedy, we can do horror. And the one Latino film coming up and being released is the one that is supposed to break all box office records and is supposed to be the best Latino film, the Latina film that's come out ever. And it's not like that. So, like, you know, understanding that it is, like, a really, really bad kind of, like, goal for these studios to have about any film that comes out, no matter the genre, like, it does make a difference to go to the theater and choose to watch this film. And I think by disseminating information, like I said, I think it, like, it really starts grassroots, like you're doing, Consuelo, with this podcast and kind of, like, letting people know what's out there to kind of discover all of this, you know, work that other community members are doing.
It makes me feel really hopeful because I had no idea. I really had no idea. It's like a big fluffy down comforter. It's like when I watched Equit Saramo on Max, and you sit with it, it ends. And the beauty of the platforms, when they work for you, is that it said, well, how about watching this film and this film and this film? There were so many Latine shorts that came up. I watched four in a row. I just... Just watching was like, in case I lose this connection ever again, they are there.
Yeah, that's
and
wonderful.
You're right. It's up to us to do our own digging and not be spoon fed what we should be watching. Right. But actually go dig.
That's exactly right.
You think?
That's exactly right. So I'll just piggyback off what you're saying, you know, just echo that it really is up to us to not wait for the next Marvel movie or the next, you know, tentpole Hollywood movie, that there's stories out there, indie cinema, you know, independent. There's some beautiful, beautiful, worthwhile stories out there that we have to go out and find, you know, so sort of making that switch, that not just wait for any of the trailers that you're fed, like you're saying, but really, like, go outside of that. And, you know, the internet can be a wonderful thing, a scary thing sometimes, but a wonderful thing also, in terms of a research tool. So yeah, definitely go out.
Guys,
there.
I'm so sorry. Yeah. I now have to, like, log off. I have to log into the other one.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'll finish but off.
Yes. I can. Okay, yeah. Perfect. Okay, thank you so much, Consuelo.
Oh,
okay,
gracias,
thank
Miguel.
You.
Totally. Okay. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Ciao. We find ourselves where both of you are reassuring not only yourselves because you're living it, but also inspiring all of the listeners and audiences in your films that you have agency over your own life. So if you want to see a film of or a story that resonates with you, that you see yourself in, they're there. Yeah. And whether it's a film student at Pratt or if it's, you know, a professional director like yourselves, like, then it's up to us to go get them. They're put there. And we have to do a better job about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, be active, you know, an active audience. And I'll add a little bit to what you're just saying right now, because this is another thing that has been a guiding light for me. I'm a huge fan of Toni Morrison.
Oh, you know, for sure.
Well, unfortunately, you know, but one of the things that she said early on for me in an interview, she said, if you don't see a story that you want to see, then you have the responsibility to write that story, right? And I think that for us, you know, for Miguel and I, that has been something that we've taken to heart. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to take that action to then affect these things that are making you angry and are making you complain, right? Mm-hmm. And I think for Miguel and I, it is just sort of sharpening that writing knife. You know what I mean? That mental writing tool that only gets sharpened the more you do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think it's so important as creators, as artists, that we hold the solution to that problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the lack of representation, the lack of seeing our lived experiences on screen, mm-hmm. or on TV, we have to sit down and write that and make them the best possible, because mm-hmm. the proof is in the pudding. You need to know how to do that. You need to know what story structure is. You need to understand there is a specific way to write screenplays, to write pilots, to write TV. And you have to learn that,
oh.
you know? And I think the more you do it, the easier it'll become to do that. It's up to us as well to write those stories that we want to see.
Yeah. No, that's so true. It's so true. You're right. If our voices are put together, you know, if they come together and we have this roar of our right. presence, and that is the mainstream. The beauty of your screenplays, this is the human condition. I love stories that are just speaking to the human condition, mm-hmm. and that it's 100% representation, because you're taking a slice out of the culture, a slice out of,
right.
out of, you know, living. This is just what living is like. So there's no contrived personality in it that fits the Latino right. in, like, oh, let's...
No. And also, you know, I subscribe to the idea that the more specific a story is,
mm-hmm.
the more universal it can be, you know? And when we set out to make Acuitzeramo, he wrote and directed it, I acted it, and mm-hmm. I produced it, right? But when we set out to make the movie, I remember having a conversation with him, and we were sort of like, okay, so this is going to be in Spanish. It's not going to have sort of the broad appeal that we would have if we've decided to make it in English. And sort of we went through this checklist of bad things that were going to happen with this movie. We're not going to have as big an audience. You know, it's going to be relegated to, you know, some place where hopefully some people will see it. Right. But we knew that we needed to tell the story, and we knew that it needed to happen in Spanish,
mm-hmm.
Or, you know, 95% of it is in yeah. Spanish.
That American guy shows up just slanging English.
right, exactly. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, we couldn't have been more wrong. It ended up playing in 65 film festivals. It ended up winning, you know, 25 awards, and Max put it on its streaming service. And so we were wrong, you know, but that was a huge, huge, huge lesson for us, because we had this preconceived notion that a movie in Spanish about an old queer man was just going to be not interesting. And we couldn't have been more wrong, you know? And I think it's really important as artists also that you don't write to try and please
yes.
an audience. You don't write to try and fill some void that you think intellectually needs to be there, you know, right. that you sort of write from here, from the heart, mm-hmm. and from a place of authenticity
yes.
and specificity. And I think in doing that, you really are inherently going to appeal to a wider audience,
mm-hmm.
because like you're saying, you know, the human condition is a human condition, whether it's in Spanish, whether it's in Mandarin, whether it's in whatever language,
yeah,
you know,
it resonates.
If the story hits,
yeah.
you know, if the story hits, if you really are touching on this thing that we all experience,
mm-hmm.
people are going to be able to relate and empathize mm-hmm. with.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because it's every little component. It's going to strike to your heart. It's going to hit your soul. It's going to bring up something in you that you didn't even know was buried or like that you were operating under. You hit a couple really strong points. And one of them is on that flip side of authenticity. When you speak in your authentic voice, not only do you get empowered, but people receiving you feel that they can let their guard down. You can sense when someone's being genuine. You can sense when someone has the courage to be their authentic self, and it puts you at ease. And then when you put each other at ease, then you're more open and communicative and welcoming than trying to be this, what's going to make that person happy. I'm going to be whoever they need me to be in order for them to be happy, in order for me to be loved. I'm going to become whatever they need me to be. And they can also sense that, oh, then I have power over you.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to treat you well, right? But
I mean, I think that's such, you hit on such a key belief. One thing that, again, bring it back to my mom a little bit, because I think that specific thing that you just said was a lesson that I learned from my mom. Like I said, you know, grew up in Huntington Park. My mom cleaned homes in Brentwood and Beverly Hills and in Bel Air. And we had to talk about what your parents did for a living, right? And I remember that there was a sense of shame when it was going to be my turn to speak about what my mom did for a living.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And my mom and I had incredible communication. Like, we would just talk all the time. And I was like, well, Mom, I don't know that I want to say that you clean houses. And now she says, look, you never have to worry about that, because what's important is the integrity and grace with which you do what you do for a living. And that for me is something that she cleared up that insecurity and that childish sort of fear, like in a second, with understanding, with love. She could have been upset at me. It's like, what are you talking about? You know what I mean? Like, it could have gone a thousand different ways. And she said, oh, no. You have nothing to worry about. Here's the key, you know, and she gave it to me.
Wow.
Miguel's parents were farm workers, you know, and one of the things that we bring to the table when we have meetings with executives or we have to talk about why we do the work we do, I think that our place of pride and comfort in terms of where we come from, the life experiences we've had, you know, which have been extremely privileged in so many ways, but that we come at it and realize the dignity that we come from through our mothers, through our families, you know, that I think it's my superpower that I grew up with a mother who had a clean home.
Yeah. See, you know it's that subconscious. Yeah. It's just like you brought up a second ago, how you were editing yourselves in your own storyline because subconsciously you were still feeling it's not that it's not good enough, but it won't be as well received, which is saying it's not good enough for society. And that we don't realize how much we do edit ourselves all the time the code switching and the, you know.
Absolutely.
And that epiphany when you're like, no, the power that we hold is all those experiences, not the edited version, but that is your superpower. Exactly. Seeing that strength and seeing that pride and seeing just what it takes to negotiate this society from coming up in your family the way it was. That is, you're living like 20 people different lives. That's what you're bringing to the table. It's like, oh, I could do that. Oh, I could do that. Oh, yeah. You know?
Right. Yeah. There's so much strength and inauthenticity.
Yeah.
And in that belief that you are not wrong, that you don't have to change for the sake of whomever you ever find yourself in front of. And I think on the flip side, that scene, if you believe that, they're going to believe it. And I think they'll perceive you in a way that you didn't expect once you really own, you know, that true essence of who you are, you know. So yeah, thanks, Mom. Gracias, mama.
What was your mother's name?
My mother's name is Lydia.
Oh.
She was Lydia. She actually, the the best friend in The Ballad of Teeth and the Machine, the younger coworker.
Yeah, the coworker.
Right?
Yeah.
That, she never uses her name, but in the screenplay, her name is Lydia.
Oh, so she's always with you. Oh.
Yeah, always, always. Oh, I'll give you a little B-side info information.
Yes.
The picture of Consuelo in The Ballad of Teeth and the Machine, of Pilar, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Is that Consuelo?
That's my mom.
Oh, that's Lydia.
No. That's Lydia.
Lydia. Okay. Well, I have to take a look at that.
So whoever watches, no spoilers, but you will see a photograph. Know that that's my mom.
Oh, you bring the Reinas. They're always on set with you. Let me say that. Wow.
Yeah, always, always.
So where is it going for you now then, for the two of you? Are you going to stay collaborating and moving forward in this mission? Is this?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Right now, what we're working on is literally right before we got on with you, we finished a writing session today's writing session. So we're expanding The Ballad of Teeth and the Machines into a feature film. And we're really excited about it. We got through our first sketched out outline of the feature version of the film, and we're really excited about it. Another project that we're looking to find financing for and find its home and the team is this project called Angel in Retrograde, that we wrote a couple of years back, and it's sort of gaining momentum again.
Oh, awesome. I do feel this is the year. I don't know. It started off that way. I feel that this is the year. When you were saying that like it's swelling, the tide's rising, I just feel this is the year it really explodes. So seize the moment. I think this is it. Yeah. Oh my gosh, Luis, thank you so, so much.
Oh my gosh.
No, it's really important to get to know who you are and why you are creating what you create. And it just brings us closer to your films and your acting. And we really, really value you. Thank you so much.
Oh my gosh. It's such a pleasure. So happy to know you and you're a wonderful person. And like Miguel said, thank you for providing a platform for us to come on here and talk about our work and really sort of be able to connect to an audience that we otherwise wouldn't. Consuelo, thank you so much. You know, thank you for a beautiful conversation. You're a natural hostess. You're an awesome and beautiful conversation. Hopefully we can come back again with the next project.
And bow.
Awesome. All right. Yeah,
and
exactly.
See. Encore, encore.
Were you just standing up and cheering for these two? Thanking them from the bottom of our hearts for taking on this big mission of providing representation of the comunidad on the big screen. Every story, every thought, always pulling from our real life experiences, not as seen by biased or stereotyped lens, but rather from within the passion of our own lived experiences. These are stories that would never be told if it weren't for the people in our comunidad who take it upon themselves to dedicate their life to bringing it forward. We will be highlighting this next week in our Pod Club episode that we pull the gems from today's full length to really focus on how it affects us all, universally. Just like Luis and Miguel said, the more personal the story is, the more universal it applies. We love that you have subscribed to this podcast and continue to champion women who understand the life of all things Latina. Step into your truth, ladies. Ciao. Be sure to follow and subscribe to the Encuentras Your Voice podcast so you don't miss a single episode. They will automatically drop into your listening device each week. And we'd really, really appreciate if you take a moment to add to the reviews that we already have. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you're hoping to hear, and we will get there. Share this with your friends and family to help us grow our comunidad, and keep following us on our social media. To Encuentras Your Voice, we are so grateful to you for helping us grow this community and would love to learn of all the amazing Latinas who you know are creating the world we thrive in. So reach out to me on social media at Encuentras Your Voice
And let's keep leaning into our authenticity in pride. Help us make Encuentros Your Voice the place where you are 100% represented.